You recently said something to me like, we can't go any faster than the Lord is taking us. And that's very true. But it's also true and important to understand that we can go much slower than he's trying to take us or trying to lead us. And we do that whenever our obedience doesn't keep pace with our knowledge. I believe this was my problem for a lot of years, though I was far from understanding it. Because when I began to understand that true Christian growth was a work of the Spirit of God and not a work of man's discipline or not a work of man's effort or learning, I therefore kind of automatically assumed that I was being led along just as fast as the Lord desired. I had a desire to grow. I felt a desire to follow the Lord, and I didn't want to waste my time like Israel doing circles in the wilderness. And because I felt a zeal to move forward and a willingness to learn, I suppose that any lack of change in my heart or any lack of growth, spiritual growth, was simply due to it not yet being the Lord's time. But I've since been able to see that I was operating under a great misunderstanding with regard to this point, or maybe it's more accurate to say a great deception. It's absolutely true that spiritual growth is a work of the Spirit of God, but there's many ways that man can work against the Spirit, the will of the Spirit, the purpose of the Spirit, and perhaps the most common have to do with the hundreds of what we call little ways that our heart or our will does not humbly and sincerely submit to and obey the measure of spiritual understanding that we currently have. I mean, the various ways that we don't really live up to what we already know. It's important to realize that the reason God teaches us, the reason he shows things to us or makes things known to us, is not primarily so that we possess correct information. He teaches us so that we see the correct path and then walk in it. Walk in it with a humble and resigned heart all the time. And there's a lot of confusion on this issue because man naturally and almost universally assumes that his primary problem when he begins to think about God or think about spiritual life, he assumes that his primary problem is a lack of spiritual knowledge or a lack of understanding. We can feel that something is wrong and that we should be further along or that there's some kind of problem. And so we begin to read, we begin to study scriptures, books, we begin to listen to teachings, thinking all the time that our increased understanding is also increased spiritual growth. But the truth is that our primary problem usually has nothing to do with needing more spiritual information. Our problem and the reason for our lack of growth or lack of change is that we haven't truly surrendered our hearts and our lives, both inwardly and outwardly, to the things that we've already been shown, the things that we can already see to some extent. Now, upon hearing this, man is very quick to defend and justify himself, either insisting, like the rich young ruler that talked to Jesus, that we haven't broken any of the major commands of God, or that we're patiently waiting for God to speak to us or show us what we're supposed to do. But again, this is usually a great deception, because while we wait and we want to put the blame on God's timing, or perhaps on our own lack of understanding or lack of spiritual revelation, waiting for God to show us something, there's generally a multitude of little ways that we're not living up to what we already know to be right. Or perhaps it's more accurate to say that there's a multitude of ways that our will has not yet given up to the revealed will of God. It's not really that we don't know enough. It's simply that we want something else. Now, I'm not at all suggesting that man, by the exertion of his will, can produce spiritual life or growth. No, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3:6 that only God gives the increase. But though man cannot create spiritual life, he can and he must submit to spiritual life whenever and however it appears. Man can't create real righteousness, goodness, virtue, or purity in the strength of his flesh. That's certain. But he can and he must submit his will in humble surrender to absolutely everything that the light makes manifest in his heart, and to everything that the Spirit desires to put to death or to make alive in him. This is a little bit like saying that man cannot create the wind, but he can put up his sail and be driven by the wind's power. Or he can drop his sail and just drift away in a contrary direction. And in this sense, I think we can say that man is either carefully and vigilantly following the pillar of fire towards the promised land, or he's falling behind, losing his way, and then often complaining or grumbling that the fault really lies in God's timing or in God not making his will sufficiently clear. And what I'm trying to say is that when we don't actually turn at his rebuke, if we don't really surrender our hearts, our wills, and our lives to the multitude of little ways that God is showing us our contrariness to him, then we stop moving forward. And at that point, it doesn't really matter how much we say we want him to show us his power, or how much we're praying for change, or how much we're wanting him to teach us something new or reveal something exciting. When obedience doesn't keep pace with knowledge, then our eyes imperceptibly grow dim, and our ears become deaf, and our hearts get slowly hard, and we stop crossing the wilderness. I mean, when God makes manifest something in our lives, anything really, in our lives, in our words, in our desires, in our pursuits, in our religion, in our behavior, in our relationships, whatever, anything that is wrong or dead or empty or vain or hypocritical or selfish or proud, anything that's opposed to his nature, to his truth, to his purpose, he does this not so that we just understand or recognize the things that are contrary to God. No, he gives us an ability to see and to feel these convictions so that we, as it says in 1 Peter 1:22, obey the truth through the Spirit. Or as Jesus says in John 3:21, so that we practice the truth and come to the light. Or as Jude says very strongly in verse 23, that we hate even the garment that has been defiled by the flesh. We're shown what is unclean so that we will no longer touch it. We're shown what is dead so that we'll bury it. I mean, so that we'll end our relationship with it. We're shown what is Babylon, not so that we can just criticize the dead church or criticize things that are wrong, but so that, as he says in Revelation, that we can come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and lest you receive of her plagues. God's light shines in the heart and manifests all sorts of things and ways and words that are not of the Father, but are rather of the world, of the flesh, and of the devil. Ephesians 5:13, all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. And by his light we're enabled to see, and by his grace we're empowered to leave behind one thing after another that we have inherited from Adam, until we have parted with all for his sake. And this is really the only way to continue growing, to continue crossing the wilderness and inheriting the land. And I mention all of this to you because I don't want you to fall short of God's desire for you or for your church. For the sake of your own heart and for the sake of your group there, it's extremely important that your obedience goes hand in hand with your understanding, that your obedience keeps pace with your knowledge. I know that you preach things that are true, but it's even more important to live the truth in everything. I know that you preach the cross, but it's far more important that you carry the cross, both in your private and in your public life, in all things. And if you're able to see things in your life or in your words or in the way that you run the church there that aren't right, or that are empty words or lifeless traditions or manipulation or anything that does not manifest your current knowledge of the truth, then what I'm trying to say is that these things will hinder you from moving forward. And they'll also be a stumbling block in the way of the people that are walking with you. I write these things to you in love and in a real desire to see you and all the people there continue to grow in the life of truth.